At the end of the month, I went up to the apartment. He was sitting there alone on the couch beneath the framed photo of the two Pomeranians. "Sir?"
"What's up, Balram?"
"It's been a month."
"So?"
"Sir, my wages."
"Ah, yes.
3,000, right?" He whipped out his wallet, it was fat with notes, and flicked out 3 notes onto the table. I picked them up and bowed. Something of what his brother had been saying must have got to him, because he said, "You're sending some of it home, aren't you?"
"All of it, sir. Just what I need to eat and drink here. The rest goes home."
"Good, Balram, good. Family is a good thing." At 10 o'clock that night, I walked down to the market just around the corner from Buckingham Towers B block. It was the last shop in the market. On a billboard above it, huge black letters in Hindi said, "Action English Liquor Shop. Indian-made foreign liquor sold here." It was the usual civil war that you find in a liquor shop in the evenings. Men pushing and straining at the counter with their hands outstretched and yelling at the top of their voices. The boys behind the counter couldn't hear a word of what was being said in that din, and Ginger under the tap.
"What are you doing?"
she shouted.
"Washing ginger, madam."
"That's with your right hand.
What's your left hand doing?"
"Madam?" I looked down.
"Stop scratching your groin with your left hand!"
"Don't be angry, madam. I'll stop." But it was no use. She would not stop shouting.
"You're so filthy. Look at you. Look at your teeth. Look at your clothes. There's red paan all over your teeth. And there are red spots on your shirt. It's disgusting. Get out. Clean up the mess you've made in the kitchen and get out."
I put the piece of ginger back in the fridge, turned off the boiling water, and went downstairs. I got in front of the common mirror and opened my mouth. The teeth were red, blackened, rotting from paan. I washed my mouth out, but the lips were still red. She was right. The paan, which I'd chewed for years, like my father and like Kishan and everyone else I knew, was discoloring my teeth and corroding my gums. The next evening, Mr. Ashok and Pinky Madam came down to the entranceway fighting, got into the car, fighting, and kept fighting as I drove the Honda City from Buckingham Towers B block onto the main road. "Going to the mall, sir?" I asked, the moment they were quiet. Pinky Madam let out a short, high laugh. I expected such things from her, but not from him, yet he joined in too. "It's not mall, it's a mall," he said. "Say it again." I kept saying mall, and they kept asking me to repeat it, and then giggled hysterically each time I did so. By the end they were holding hands again. So some good came out of my humiliation. I was glad for that, at least. They got out of the car, slammed the door, and went into the mall. A guard saluted as they came close. Then the glass doors opened by themselves and swallowed the two of them in. I did not get out of the car. It helped me concentrate my mind better if I was here. I closed my eyes.
Mall.
No, that wasn't it.
Maul.
Mala.
"Country Mouse, get out of the car and come here."
A little group of drivers crouched in a circle outside the parking lot in the mall. One of them began shouting at me, waving a copy of a magazine in his hand. It was the driver with the diseased lips. I put a big smile on my face and went up to him.
"Any more questions about city life, Country Mouse?" he asked.
Cannonades of laughter all around him. He put a hand on me and whispered, "Have you thought about what I said, sweetie pie? Does your master need anything? Ganja, girls, boys, golf balls, good quality American golf balls, duty-free?"
"Don't offer him all these things now," another driver said.
This one was crouching on his knees, swinging a keychain with the keys to his master's car like a boy with a toy. "He's raw from the village, still pure. Let city life corrupt him first." He snatched the magazine, Murder Weekly, of course, and began reading out loud. The gossip stopped. All the drivers drew closer. It was a rainy night.
Visha lay in bed, his breath smelling of alcohol, his eyes glancing out the window. The woman next door had come home and was about to remove her. The man with the vitiligo lip shouted, "Look there! It's happening today, too!" The driver with the magazine, annoyed at this disturbance, kept reading, but the others were standing up now, looking in the direction of the mall. What was happening, Mr. Premier, was one of those incidents that were so common in the early days of the shopping mall, and which were often reported in the daily newspapers under the title, "Is There No Space for the Poor in the Malls of New India?" The glass doors had opened, but the man who wanted to go into them could not do so. The guard at the door had stopped him. He pointed his stick at the man's feet and shook his head. The man had sandals on his feet. All of us drivers, too, had sandals on our feet, but everyone who was allowed into the mall had shoes on their feet. Instead of backing off and going away, as 9 in 10 in his place would have done, the man in the sandals exploded, "Am I not a human being too?" He yelled it so hard that the spit burst from his mouth like a fountain and his knees were trembling. One of the drivers let out a whistle. A man who had been sweeping the outer compound of the mall put down his broom and watched. For a moment, the man at the door looked ready to hit the guard. But then he turned around and walked away. "That fellow has balls," one of the drivers said. "If all of us were like that, we'd rule India, and they would be polishing our boots." Then the drivers got back into their circle. The reading of the story resumed. I watched the keys circling in the keychain. I watched the smoke rising from the cigarettes. I watched the pan hit the earth in red diagonals. The worst part of being a driver is that you have hours to yourself while waiting for your employer. You can spend this time chit-chatting and scratching your groin. You can read murder and rape magazines. You can develop the chauffeur's habit. It's a kind of yoga, really, of putting a finger in your nose and letting your mind go blank for hours. They should call it the bored driver's asana. You can sneak a bottle of Indian liquor into the car. Boredom makes drunks of so many honest drivers. But if the driver sees his free time as an opportunity, if he uses it to think, then the worst part of his job becomes the best. That evening, while driving back to the apartment, I looked into the rear-view mirror. Mr. Ashok was wearing a T-shirt. It was like no T-shirt I would ever choose to buy at a store. The larger part of it was empty and white, and there was a small design in the center. I would have bought something very colourful, with lots of words and designs on it. Better value for the money. Then one night, after Mr. Ashok and Pinky Madam had gone up, I went out to the local market. Under the glare of naked yellow light bulbs, men squatted on the road, selling basketfuls of glassy bangles, steel bracelets, toys, headscarves, pens and keychains. I found the fellow selling T-shirts. "No," I kept saying to each shirt he showed me, until I found one that was all white, with a small word in English in the center. Then I went looking for the man selling black shoes. I bought my first toothpaste that night. I got it from the man who usually sold me pan. He had a side business in toothpastes that cancelled out the effects of pan. As I brushed my teeth with my finger, I noticed what my left hand was doing. It had crawled up to my groin without my noticing, the way a lizard goes stealthily up a wall, and was about to scratch. I waited. The moment it moved, I seized it with the right hand. I pinched the thick skin between the thumb and the index finger, where it hurts the most, and held it like that for a whole minute. When I let go, a red welt had formed on the skin of the palm. There. That's your punishment for groin scratching from now on. In my mouth, the toothpaste had thickened into a milky foam. It began dripping down the sides of my lips. I spat it out. Brush, brush, spit. Brush, brush, spit. Why had my father never told me not to scratch my groin? Why had my father never taught me to brush my teeth in milky foam? Why had he raised me to live like an animal? Why do all the poor live amid such filth, such ugliness? Brush, brush, spit. Brush, brush, spit. If only a man could spit his past out so easily. Next morning, as I drove Pinky Madam to the mall, I felt a small parcel of cotton pressing against my shoe-clad feet. She left, slamming the door. I waited for 10 minutes, and then, inside the car, I changed. I went to the gateway of the mall in my new white T-shirt. But there, the moment I saw the guard, I turned around, went back to the Honda City. I got into the car and punched the ogre 3 times. I touched the stickers of the goddess Kali with her long red tongue for good luck. This time I went to the rear entrance. I was sure the guard in front of the door would challenge me and say, "No, you're not allowed in, even with a pair of black shoes and a T-shirt that is mostly white, with just one English word on it." I was sure, until the last moment, that I would be caught and called back and slapped and humiliated there. Even as I was walking inside the mall, I was sure someone would say, "Hey, it's a one-way phone." So what's the point of a phone you can't talk to your family with? It's so that my master can call me and give me instructions on where to pick him up. I just have to keep it here, in my pocket, wherever I go. He took the phone back from me, rubbed it clean, and put it in his pocket. Until this evening, his status in the driver's circle had been low. His master drove only a Maruti Suzuki Zen, a small car. Today he was being as bossy as he wanted. The drivers were passing his cell phone from hand to hand and gazing at it like monkeys gaze at something shiny they have picked up. There was the smell of ammonia in the air. One of the drivers was pissing not far from us. Vitiligo Lips was watching me from a corner. "Country Mouse," he said, "you look like a fellow who wants to say something." I shook my head. The traffic grew worse by the day. There seemed to be more cars every evening. As the jams grew worse, so did Pinky Madam's temper. One evening, when we were just crawling down MG Road into Gurgaon, she lost it completely. She began screaming. "Why can't we go back, Ashoki? Look at this fucking traffic jam. It's like this every other day now." "Please don't begin that again, please."
"Why not? You promised me, Ashoki, we'll be in Delhi just 3 months and get some paperwork done and go back. But I'm starting to think you only came here to deal with this income tax problem."
"Were you lying to me the whole time?" "It wasn't his fault, what happened between them. I will insist on that, even in a court of law. He was a good husband, always coming up with plans to make her happy. On her birthday, for instance, he had me dress up as a Maharaja, with a red turban and dark, cooling glasses, and serve them their food in this costume. I'm not talking of any ordinary home cooking, either. He got me to serve her some of that stinking stuff that comes in cardboard boxes and drives all the rich absolutely crazy. She laughed and laughed and laughed when she saw me in my costume, bowing low to her with the cardboard box. I served them and then, as Mr. Ashok had instructed, stood near the portrait of Cuddles and Puddles with folded hands and waited. 'Ashok,' she said, 'now hear this. Balram, what is it we're eating?' I knew it was a trap, but what could I do? I answered. The two of them burst into giggles.
'Say it again, Balram.'
They laughed again.
'It's not pidja, it's pizza. Say it properly.'
'Wait, you're mispronouncing it too. There's a T in the middle. Pizza.'
'Don't correct my English, Ashok. There's no T in pizza. Look at the box.'
I had to hold my breath as I stood there, waiting for them to finish. The stuff smelled so awful.
'He's cut the pizza so badly. I just don't understand how he can come from a caste of cooks.'
'You've just dismissed the cook. Please don't fire this fellow, too. He's an honest one.' When they were done, I scraped the food off the plates and washed them. From the kitchen window, I could see the main road of Gurgaon, full of the lights of the shopping malls. A new mall had just opened up at the end of the road, and the cars were streaming into its gates. I pulled the window shade down and went back to washing dishes. Pija. Pzja. Zipja. Pizja.
I wiped the sink with my palm and turned off the lights. The two of them had gone into their bedroom. I heard shouting from inside. On tiptoe, I went to the closed door. I put my ear to the wood. Shouting rose from both sides, followed by a scream, followed by the sound of a man's flesh slapping woman's flesh. About time you took charge, O lamb that was born from the loins of a landlord. I locked the door behind me and took the elevator down. Half an hour later, just when I was about to fall asleep, another of the servants came and yelled for me. The bell was ringing. I put on my pants, washed my hands again and again at the common tap, and drove the car up to the entrance of the building. Drive us into the city.
Yes, sir. Where in the city?
Any place you want to go, Pinky?
No word from her.
Take us to Connaught Place, Balram. Neither husband nor wife talked as I drove. I still had the Maharaja outfit on. Mr. Ashok looked at Pinky Madam nervously half a dozen times.
You're right, Pinky, he said in a husky voice. I didn't mean to challenge you on what you said. But I told you, there's only one thing wrong with this place. We have this fucked-up system called parliamentary democracy. Otherwise, we'd be just like China.
Ashok, I have a headache. Please.
We'll have some fun tonight. There's a good TGI Fridays here. You'll like it.
When we got to Connaught Place, he made me stop in front of a big red neon light. Wait for us here, Balram. We'll be back in 20 minutes. They had been gone for an hour, and I was still inside the car, watching the lights of Connaught Place. I punched the fluffy black ogre a dozen times. I looked at the magnetic stickers of Goddess Kali with her skulls and her long red tongue. I stuck my tongue out at the old witch. I yawned. It was well past midnight and very cold. I would have loved to play some music to pass the time, but of course the mongoose had forbidden that. I opened the door of the car. There was an acrid smell in the air. The other drivers had made a fire for themselves, which they kept going by shoving bits of plastic into it. The rich of Delhi, to survive the winter, kept electrical heaters, or gas heaters, or even burn logs of wood in their fireplaces. When the homeless or servants, like night watchmen and drivers, who are forced to spend time outside in winter, want to keep warm, they burn whatever they find on the ground. One of the best things to put in the fire is cellophane, the kind used to wrap fruits, vegetables, and business books in. Inside the flame, it changes its nature and melts into a clear fuel. The only problem is that while burning, it gives off a white smoke that makes your stomach churn. Vitiligo Lips was feeding bags of cellophane into the fire. With his free hand, he waved to me.
Country Mouse, don't sit there by yourself. That leads to bad thoughts.
The warmth was so tempting. But no, my mouth would tickle if I went near them, and I would ask for Pan.
Look at the snob, he's even dressed like a Maharaja today.
Come join us, Maharaja of Buckingham.
Away from the warmth, away from temptation, I walked, down the pathways of Connaught Place, until the smell of churned mud filled the air. There is construction work in any direction you look in Delhi. Glass skeletons being raised for malls or office blocks, rows of gigantic T-shaped concrete supports, like a line of anvils, where the new bridges or overpasses are coming up. Huge craters being dug for new mansions for the rich, and here too, in the heart of Connaught Place, even in the middle of the night, under the glare of immense spotlights, construction went on. A giant pit had been excavated. Machines were rumbling from inside it. I had heard of this work. They were putting a railway under the ground of Delhi. The pit they had made for this work was as large as any of the coal mines I'd seen in Dhanbad. Another man was watching the pit with me, a well-dressed man in a shirt and tie and pants with nice pleats. Normally his kind would never talk to me, but maybe my Maharaja tunic confused him.
This city is going to be like Dubai in 5 years, isn't it?
5, I said contemptuously, in 2 years.
Look at that yellow crane. It's a monster.
It was a monster, sitting at the top of the pit,
with huge metal jaws, alternately gorging and disgorging immense quantities of mud, like creatures that had to obey it, men with troughs of mud on their heads walked in circles around the machine. They did not look much bigger than mice. Even in the winter night, the sweat had made their shirts stick to their glistening black bodies. It was freezing cold when I returned to the car. All the other drivers had left. Still no sign of my masters. I closed my eyes and tried to remember what I had had for dinner. A nice hot curry with juicy chunks of dark meat, big puddles of red oil in the gravy. Nice. They woke me up by banging on my window. I scrambled out and opened the doors for them. Both were loud and happy and reeked of some English liquor. Whatever it was, I hadn't yet tried it at the shop. I tell you, they were going at it like animals as I drove them out of Connaught Place. He was pushing his hand up and down her thigh, and she was giggling. I watched 1 second too long. He caught me in the mirror. I felt like a child that had been watching his parents through a slit in their bedroom door. My heart began to sweat. I half expected him to catch me by the collar and fling me to the ground and stamp me with his boots the way his father used to do to fishermen in Laxmangar. But this man, as I've told you, was different. He was capable of becoming someone better than his father. My eyes had touched his conscience. He nudged Pinky Madam and said, "We're not alone, you know." She became grumpy at once and turned her face to the side. 5 minutes passed in silence. Reeking of English liquor, she leaned towards me. "Give me the steering wheel." "No, Pinky, don't. You're drunk. Let him..." "What a fucking joke. Everyone in India drinks and drives, but you won't let me do it?" "Oh, I hate this." He slumped on his seat. "Balram, remember never to marry." "Is he stopping at the traffic signal?" "Balram, why are you stopping? Just drive." "It's a traffic signal, Pinky. Let him stop. Balram, obey the traffic rules. I command you." "I command you to drive, Balram. Drive." Completely confused by this time, I compromised. I took the car 5 feet in front of the white line and then came to a stop. "Did you see what he did?" Mr. Ashok said. "That was pretty clever." "Yes, Ashok. He's a fucking genius." The timer next to the red light said that there was still 30 seconds to go before the light changed to green. I was watching the timer when the giant Buddha materialized on my right. A beggar child had come up to the Honda City, holding up a beautiful plaster of Paris statue of the Buddha. Every night in Delhi, beggars are always selling something by the roadside, books or statues or strawberries in boxes, but for some reason, perhaps because my nerves were in such a bad state, I gazed at the Buddha longer than I should have. It was just a tilt of my head, just a thing that happened for half a second, but she caught me out. "Balram appreciates the statue," she said. Mr. Ashok chuckled. "Sure, he's a connoisseur of fine art." She cracked the egg open. She lowered the window and said, "Let's see it," to the beggar child. He, or she, you can never tell with beggar children, pushed the Buddha into the Honda. "Do you want to buy the sculpture, driver?" "No, madam, I'm sorry." "Balram Halwe, maker of sweets, driver of cars, connoisseur of sculpture." "I'm sorry, madam." The more I apologized, the more amused the two of them got. At last, putting an end to my agony, the light changed to green, and I drove away from the wretched Buddha as fast as I could. She reached over and squeezed my shoulder. "Balram, stop the car." I looked at Mr. Ashok's reflection. He said nothing. I stopped the car. "Balram, get out. We're leaving you to spend the night with your Buddha. The Maharaja and the Buddha, together for the night." She got into the driver's seat, started the car, and drove away, while Mr. Ashok, dead drunk, giggled and waved goodbye at me. If he hadn't been drunk, he never would have allowed her to treat me like this. I'm sure of that. People were always taking advantage of him. If it were just me and him in that car, Nothing bad would ever have happened to either of us. There was a traffic island separating the two sides of the road, and trees had been planted in the island. I sat down under a tree. The road was dead. Then two cars went by, one behind the other, their headlights making a continuous ripple on the leaves, like you see on the branches of trees that grow by a lake. How many thousands of such beautiful things there must be to see in Delhi, if you were just free to go wherever you wanted and do whatever you wanted. A car was coming straight toward me, flashing its headlights on and off and sounding its horns. The Honda City had done a U-turn, an illegal U-turn, mind you, down the road, and was charging right at me as if to plow me over. Behind the wheel I saw Pinky Madam grinning and howling, while Mr. Ashok next to her was smiling. Did I see a wrinkle of worry for my fate on his forehead? Did I see his hand reach across and steady the steering wheel so that the car wouldn't hit me? I like to think so. The car stopped, half a foot in front of me, with a screech of burning rubber. I cringed. How my poor tires had suffered because of this woman. Pinky Madam opened the door and popped her grinning face out.
Thought I had really left you behind, Mr. Maharaja?
No, madam.
You're not angry, are you?
Not at all. And then I added, to make it more believable, employers are like mother and father. How can one be angry with them? I got into the back seat. They did another U-turn across the middle of the avenue, and then drove off at top speed, racing through one red light after the other. The two of them were shrieking and pinching each other and making giggling noises, and helpless to do anything, I was just watching the show from the back seat when the small black thing jumped into our path, and we hit it and knocked it over and rolled the wheels of the car over it. From the way the wheels crunched it completely, and from how there was no noise when she stopped the car, not even a whimper or a barking, I knew at once what had happened to the thing we had hit. She was too drunk to brake at once. By the time she had, we had hurtled on another 200 or 300 yards, and then we came to a complete stop, in the middle of the road. She had kept her hands on the wheel. Her mouth was open. A dog? Mr. Ashok asked me. It was a dog, wasn't it? I nodded. The street lights were too dim, and the object, a large black lump, was too far behind us already to be seen clearly. There was no other car in sight, no other living human being in sight. As if in slow motion, her hands moved back from the wheel and covered her ears.
It wasn't a dog. It wasn't a...
Without a word between us, Mr. Ashok and I acted as a team. He grabbed her, put a hand on her mouth, and pulled her out of the driver's seat. I rushed out of the bank. We slammed the doors together. I turned the ignition key and drove the car at full speed all the way back to Gurgaon. Halfway through, she quieted down. But then, as we got closer to the apartment block, she started up again. She said, "We have to go back."
"Don't be crazy, Pinky. Balram will get us back to the apartment block in a few minutes. It's all over." "We hit something, Ashoki."
She spoke in the softest of voices.
"We have to take that thing to the hospital."
"No." Her mouth opened again. She was going to scream again in a second. Before she could do that, Mr. Ashok gagged her with his palm. He reached for the box of facial tissues and stuffed the tissues into her mouth. While she tried to spit them out, he tore the scarf from around her neck, tied it tightly around her mouth, and shoved her face into his lap and held it down there. When we got to the apartment, he dragged her to the elevator with the scarf still around her mouth. I got a bucket and washed the car. I wiped it down thoroughly and scrubbed out every bit of blood and flesh. There was a bit of both around the wheels. When he came down, I was washing the tires for the fourth time. Well, I showed him a piece of bloodied green fabric that had got stuck to the wheel. "It's cheap stuff, sir, this green cloth," I said, rubbing the rough material between my fingers. "It's what they put on children." "And do you think the child..." He couldn't say the word. There was no sound at all, sir. No sound at all. And the body didn't move, even a bit. "God, Balram, what will we do now? What will we... He slapped his hand to his thigh. What are these children doing, walking about Delhi at 1 in the morning with no one to look after them? When he had said this, his eyes lit up. Oh, she was one of those people who live under the flyovers and bridges, sir. That's my guess, too. In that case, will anyone miss her? I don't think so, sir. You know how those people in the darkness are. They have 8, 9, 10 children. Sometimes they don't know the names of their own children. Her parents, if they're even here in Delhi, if they even know where she is tonight, won't go to the police. He put a hand on my shoulder, the way he had been touching Pinky Madam's shoulder earlier in the night. Then he put a finger on his lips. I nodded. Of course, sir. Now, sleep well. It's been a difficult night for you and Pinky Madam. I removed the Maharaja tunic, and then I went to sleep. I was tired as hell, but on my lips there was the big contented smile that comes to one who has done his duty by his master, even in the most difficult of moments. The next morning I wiped the seats of the car as usual. I wiped the stickers with the face of the goddess. I wiped the ogre, and then I lit up the incense stick and put it inside, so that the seats would smell nice and holy. I washed the wheels one more time, to make sure there was not a spot of blood I had missed in the night. Then I went back to my room and waited. In the evening, one of the other drivers brought a message that I was wanted in the lobby, without the car. The mongoose was waiting for me up there. I don't know how he got to Delhi this fast. He must have rented a car and driven all night. He gave me a big smile and patted me on the shoulder. We went up to the apartment in the elevator. He sat down on the table and said, "Sit, sit. Make yourself comfortable, Balram. You're part of the family." My heart filled up with pride. I crouched on the floor, happy as a dog, and waited for him to say it again. He smoked a cigarette. I had never before seen him do that. He looked at me with narrowed eyes.
"Now it's important that you stay here in Buckingham Towers B block and not go anywhere else, not even to A block, for a few days, and not say a word to anyone about what happened."
"Yes, sir." He looked at me for a while, smoking. Then he said again, "You're part of the family, Balram." "Yes, sir." "Now go downstairs to the servants' quarters and wait there." "Yes, sir." An hour passed, and then I got called upstairs again. This time there was a man in a black coat, sitting at the dinner table next to the mongoose. He was looking over a printed piece of paper and reading it silently with his lips, which were stained red with paan. Mr. Ashok was on the phone in his room. I heard his voice through the closed door. The door to Pinky Madam's room was closed too. The whole house had been handed over to the mongoose. "Sit down, Balram. Make yourself comfortable." "Yes, sir." I squatted and made myself uncomfortable again. "Would you like some paan, Balram?" the mongoose asked. "No, sir." He smiled. "Don't be shy, Balram. You chew paan, don't you?" He turned to the man in the black coat. "Give him something to chew, please." The man in the black coat reached into his pocket and held out a small green paan. I stuck my palm out. He dropped it into my palm without touching me. "Put it in your mouth, Balram. It's for you." "Yes, sir. It's very good. Chewy. Thank you. Let's go over all this slowly and clearly." "Okay," the man in the black suit said. The red juice almost dripped out of his mouth as he spoke. "All right. The judge has been taken care of. If your man does what he is to do, we'll have nothing to worry about." "My man will do what he is to do. No worries about that. He's part of the family. He's a good boy." "Good, good." The man in the black coat looked at me and held out a piece of paper. "Can you read, fellow?" "Yes, sir." I took the paper from his hand and read, "To whomsoever it may concern. I, Balram Halwe, son of Vikram Halwe, of Laxmangar village in the district of Gaya, do make the following statement of my own free will and intention. That I drove the car that hit an unidentified person or persons, or person and objects, on the night of January 23rd this year, that I then panicked and refused to fulfill my obligations to the injured party or parties by taking them to the nearest hospital emergency ward. That there were no other occupants of the car at the time of the accident. That I was alone in the car, and alone responsible for all that happened. I swear by Almighty God that I make this statement under no duress and under instruction from no one. Signature or thumbprint. Balram Halway. Statement made in the presence of the following witnesses. Kusum Halway, of Laxmangar village, Gaya district. Chamandas Varma, advocate, Delhi High Court. Smiling affectionately at me, the mongoose said, "We've already told your family about it. Your granny. What's her name?"
"Kusum."
"I didn't hear that."
"Kusum." "Yes, that's it.
Kusum. I drove down to Laxmangar. It's a bad road, isn't it? And explained everything to her personally. She's quite a woman." He rubbed his forearms and made a big grin, so I knew he was telling the truth. "She says she's so proud of you for doing this. She's agreed to be a witness to the confession as well. That's her thumbprint on the page, Balram, just below the spot where you're going to sign. If he's illiterate, he can press his thumb," the man in the black coat said, "like this." He pressed his thumb against the air. "He's literate. His grandmother told me he was the first in the family to read and write. She said you always were a smart boy, Balram." I looked at the paper, pretending to read it again, and it began to shake in my hands. "What I am describing to you here is what happens to drivers in Delhi every day, sir. You don't believe me. You think I'm making all this up, Mr. Jabbar? When you're in Delhi, repeat the story I've told you to some good, solid, middle-class man of the city. Tell him you heard this wild, extravagant, impossible story from some driver about being framed for a murder his master committed on the road. And watch as your good, solid, middle-class friend's face blanches. Watch how he swallows hard, how he turns away to the window. Watch how he changes the topic at once. The jails of Delhi are full of drivers who are there behind bars, because they are taking the blame for their good, solid, middle-class masters. We have left the villages, but the masters still own us, body, soul, and ass. Yes, that's right. We all live in the world's greatest democracy. What a fucking joke. Doesn't the driver's family protest? Far from it. They would actually go about bragging. Their boy Balram had taken the fall, gone to Tihar jail for his employer. He was loyal as a dog. He was the perfect servant. The judges, wouldn't they see through this obviously forced confession? But they are in the racket too. They take their bribe. They ignore the discrepancies in the case. And life goes on. For everyone but the driver. That is all for tonight, Mr. Premier. It's not yet 3 a.m. But I've got to end here, sir. Even to think about this again makes me so angry. I might just go out and cut the throat of some rich man right now.